Gemara has a dispute among the Tanaim, who lived after the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, who never really saw a Kohen Gadol in their lives. So they had a dispute when the Kohen Gadol wears the tzitz, that's the golden bar around his forehead. The question exactly where the tzitz was. Mitzchah usually means forehead. Tosfos has one opinion that the tzitz was not on the forehead, it was b'makom tefillin, on the hair. Two opinions in Tosfos. So the Tanoim who lived after the Churban HaBayis never saw a Kohen Gadol, they never saw a tzitz. So they had a dispute, how is the Kodesh Lashem supposed to be written on the tzitz? Is it all supposed to be in one line? Kodesh La Hashem, La Bet Yud, Ke, Vav, Ke. Or should we have it written in two lines, Kodesh on the lower line, Kodesh Lamed, and Yudke Vavke higher up? Not one above the other, but one higher than the other. So you read the line straight, Kodesh La Hashem, you jump from the lower line to the upper line. So this is a historical machlekes, a halachic machlekes, a historical machlekes. How is the tzitz supposed to be written, Kodesh La Hashem, on one line or two lines? So one Tana pipes up and he says, Ani ha'isi b'Romi. I once had to go to Rome. The Tanaim every so often had to go to Rome to handle with the government. You need a person who knows how to handle well. Some of the Tanaim were good at it. So one of the Tanaim says, Ani ha'isi b'Romi. I was once in Rome. And he gives a whole background why they permitted him to look in the storage room in the treasury there in Rome, and he saw the tzitz among the various precious possessions that are there that the government had in Rome. They had the tzitz, and he says, and I saw the tzitz, and it was written in one line, Kodesh Lashem in one line. Wasn't it Kodesh Lamed and Yud Kei Vav Kei higher up? So you see that we have a historical record that the tzitz is sitting in Rome. And it's because of that passage in the Gemara that we assume that there are probably other additional kelim from the Beis HaMikdash hidden away in the storage houses there in Rome. They probably did not disappear. They're probably still there. When in Rome, we have to be careful not to do like the Romans. We're not permitted to display any interest in Avodah Zarah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu describes himself as a jealous God, Kel Kano Hashem. Just like sometimes you have a married couple and one of the spouses, either the husband or the wife, is a jealous lover. The husband doesn't want his wife even to talk to any other men. Or the wife is upset why her husband even displays any interest at all in any other women. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says he describes himself as a Kel Kano, a jealous God. He prohibits us. It's considered as if we are married with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Shir HaShirim is a mashal on that. The Chassan is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Kala is the Jewish people. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a jealous husband. He prohibits us from displaying any interest whatsoever in any Avodah Zarah. Al Tifnu Elhu Alilim. Gemara says it's not permissible to study any religious paintings of another religion. You have a painting of Matisyahu or Yehuda HaMakabi, that's one thing. You have a painting of Yashka, the Last Supper, or whatever, or to go study about Avodah Zarah practices, comparative religion, whatever, to display any interest whatsoever in Avodah Zarah is not permissible. David mentioned to us a few days ago that in quite a few of the chapels in Rome, they have people buried there. So it's not permissible for Kohanim to go into the chapels if there's an issue of Tubas Meis. In Shulchan Aruch it says it's not permissible for non-Kohanim to enter a church either. just says for the sake of pikuach nefesh, if a person has to save his life, so one is permitted, the psakim shulchan aruch is, one is permitted to go into a church for the sake of pikuach nefesh if it's not during prayer services. If it's during prayer services, so it says it's not even permissible for the sake of pikuach nefesh. Moritz says that Avodah Zarah is also Bahano'a. One is not permitted to get any benefit from Avodah Zarah, from the actual Getchke itself. If there's a totem pole that the Indians worship, so that totem pole is also Bahano'a. And if they put on a brand new tie on the totem pole, they dress it up, or they put on necklaces, earrings, whatever. So Noye Avodah Zarah, Tachshit Avodah Zarah are also Asa Bano. Kesev Zohav Aleihem, Asachman Kesev Zohav Aleihem, Malakach Taloch. Avodah Zarah, the Geshke is Asa Bano, the Noye Avodah Zarah Asa Bano. The Mishamshe Avodah Zarah are Asa Bano. If you have an altar on which they offered sacrifices to the Avodah Zarah, or you have a frying pan on which they burnt incense to the Avodah Zarah, or you have a candelabra where they lit candles for the as a religious ritual for the sake of the Avodah Zarah, so these are all Mishamshe Avodah Zarah, things that are used in the worship, or you have a knife that they used to use to shecht karbonis for the sake of Avodah Zarah, all of these are Mishamshe Avodah Zarah. Then there's a fourth category of Yisuri HaNoah, in addition to the actual Avodah Zarah itself, and the Noye Avodah Zarah, the necklace and the tie and the Mishamshe Avodah Zarah, the altar and so on. The fourth category is the Kruvis Avodah Zarah. If you have the Kruvis Yai Nesach, or actual flesh from Karbonis that were offered to the Avodah Zarah, so that too is Asabano. The Mishneh Maseches Avodah Zarah says that if you have a base of a Zarah, you have a church where the Nochem worship Avodah Zarah, so Kol Zman that they still worship the Avodah Zarah, even the building is also Bano. If the Goyim removed the Getchke from the building, then the building, the structure of the church becomes Mutar Bano. What is this all about? So Shulchan Aruch, they quote two interpretations from the Rishonim. Some interpret that the church is considered Noye Avodah Zarah if there's a Getchke, if there's a totem pole that they worship, and the building, the structure of the church protects that Getchke, that object of Avodah Zarah. Not only is the Avodah Zarah also Bano, the building is considered Noye Avodah Zarah, because it's Mishamesh, it's not Tashmishe Avodah Zarah. Tashmishe means if it would have been involved in the religious ritual, but it's considered part of Noye Avodah Zarah because it protects the Geshke. According to that opinion, when the Mishnah says once the Goyim remove the Geshke, the building becomes Mutter, why should that be so? So the Rishonim explained because that's considered a Nochri was Mevatel the Avodah Zarah. Just like if a Nochri has a Getchke, has a totem pole which he worships, and then a week later he decides, no, the totem pole is not a deity, the Shtender is, and he starts worshipping the Shtender. So the din is that that's considered Bitul Avodah Zarah. Once any guy, whether the Nochri who used to worship it, or a different Nochri who worships a different one Avodah Zarah, if a Nochri declares that this, I don't consider this an Avodah Zarah, I don't consider this a deity, then it becomes Mutar Bano. So the Halacha says that applies to all three, and not to the fourth one. It applies to Avodah Zarah, to the Noye Avodah Zarah, to the Mishamshe. The Kruvis Avodah Zarah, the Gemara says, can't have any people. The Kruvis Avodah Zarah is also because of its past history. So the Bitl is not going to change anything. But the actual Avodah Zarah, or the Noye Avodah Zarah, or the Mishamshe Avodah Zarah, are also because of their present state. So once a Nochri is Mevatelet, he says, I don't believe that this has powers of a deity. Or there was a building They used to protect the church. They used to protect the totem pole. So the church was considered the Noyei Avodah Zarah. So once a Nochri will remove the Getchke from that building, so that constitutes a bitul of the Noyei Avodah Zarah on the part of the Nochri. If a Jew will come and remove the Getchke, that won't help, because bitul Avodah Zarah, bitul Mishamshe Avodah Zarah, or bitul Noyei Avodah Zarah is only valid if it's done by a Nochri. A Jew cannot be Mevatel Avodah Zarah. So this is the one position in the Rishonim, that the church which houses the Getchke, the Pesel, is also Ba'anoa because it's considered Noyei Avodah Zarah, because it protects the Pesel. And if a Nochri removes the Pesel, that constitutes Bitul of the Noyei Avodah Zarah, and it'll be Mutar Ba'anoa Mikana L'Habo. The other Rishonim interpret, no, that's not considered Noyei. Noyei is if you dress up the Avodah Zarah with a tie, with a suit, with necklaces, with a crown. So that's called Noyei Avodah Zarah. A structure, a building that protects the Avodah Zarah, that's too far removed. That's not considered Noyei Avodah Zarah. That calls man that the Avodah Zarah is in the building, so it's forbidden with the Rabbanim to get any benefit from the building. Once the Avodah Zarah is removed, whether by a Yehudi or by a Nochri, it doesn't make a difference. It's not that removing the Avodah Zarah is an act of bittul. The whole thing is exera in the first place. Only a chumra midirabbanan. So the chumra was only instituted because man, the pesel, is in the building. Once it's removed, so then there's no problem. There is a Mishnah in Maseches Avodah Zarah, the first perek. The Mishnah says that there were certain seasons of the year when Ovdei Avodah Zarah pilgrims would be traveling on the highways to visit the city where the Avodah Zarah was located and to worship there. So the Gemara says those seasons of the year when there are many pilgrims going on the highway, a Yisrael, a Yehudi, is not permitted to go on that highway. Mishum Arisayim. People will think that he too is eingegläubt in the Avodah Zarah and he's on his way with the pilgrims to worship the Avodah Zarah. So the Rambam writes in his commentary on Mishnayos on that Mishnah, that if the Mishnah says you're not allowed to go on the highway that leads towards Rome, so you're certainly not allowed to live in Rome. You can't live in a city where there are churches of Avodah Zarah. So the Rambam writes, Baba Nisenu Harabim, there's no city in civilization where there's no church. Yeah, they're so from every corner there's another base of Avodah Zarah. So we have no brera, we can't really observe that din. We all live in cities that have churches that have Avodah Zarah. But to walk into the base of Avodah Zarah, Ad Kedei Kach, that's not necessary. That we still feel that's not permissible. In addition to Avodah Zarah being also Bahanoh, we're not permitted to gain any benefit from the Avodah Zarah. So the Gemara says, if Nehene is Aser, if it's forbidden to get Hanoah from Avodah Zarah, Mehana lo Kolshkein. It's certainly forbidden as part of the Yisra Hanoah that you're not permitted to be Mehana the Avodah Zarah. So not only does it mean you're not allowed to give a donation, outright donation, to the church, the Mishnah says if you have certain seasons of the year, around December 25th, when the stores will have holly hanging on the door, so the holly is used to be a symbol of the fact that this shopkeeper is giving a certain percentage of all of his profits to the church, to support the church. So the Mishnah says in the first paragraph of Avodah Zarah, you're not permitted to shop in those stores that have the holly hanging, because part of your money is going to go to towards the upkeep of the church. So Mahan Avodah Zarah is not permissible. If I shop in a store which is owned by an Ovid Avodah Zarah, Nachri Ovid Avodah Zarah, and I buy merchandise for the correct price, for a reasonable price, and this storekeeper is such a fruma Ovid Avodah Zarah that he wants to give a certain percentage of his income, his Maisik Safim, he gives to his local Orthodox church. So that's his Asik. It's not considered that I'm giving the money not considered that I'm supporting Avodah Zarah. But if he hangs the holly in the store and he's announcing and advertising in advance that a certain percentage of the profits is going to go to the Getchkeh, so then the Mishnah says, as interpreted by Rabbi Yechanan, Mishnah says you're not allowed to shop in such a store. The Ran, in his commentary on the Rif, in the end of Maseches Avodah Zarah, presents a Machlokes HaRishonim in the following case. Let's say the church sponsors a grocery store and they sell Ha'olam cheeses, Migdal cheese, whatever, like any other grocery store. They sell Cholav Yisrael milk for the same price as the regular grocery store. And they sell cookies that have a hechsher. Everything they're selling is kosher. And they're not charging extra. I'm paying the same amount of money I would pay if I buy in a Jewish store. They're not making more profit on me than anybody else. If I shop in the store and the money is going to go to the Beis Avodah Zarah, is that considered a violation of Mahana? Or not? Maybe you can say it's not Mahana. I'm getting my money's worth. I'm paying so much. I'm paying $1.50 for the cookies. That's how much it costs anywhere. So I'm not being Mahana the Avodah Zarah. I'm not paying any extra. This box of cookies says on the label that it costs $1.50. Wherever they sell it, it costs $1.50. Is that called Mahana? So the accepted opinion in Yerideya is L'chumra. Shulchan Aruch, they don't quote that it's a dispute. They're just saying not allowed to. This poses a serious problem in Manhattan because much of the business real estate, much of the business offices in Manhattan are owned by the Catholic Church, and the rent goes directly to the church. So true, they're charging the same rent that anybody else would charge. If a Jew would own the real estate, he's going to charge the same rent anyway. But still, my rent is going to towards the upkeep of the church. So in Shulchan Aruch, they accepted Psak is that that's not permissible. Karka does not become Asa Bahanoa Mitama Vedizora. The Gemara, the Mishnah, comments on the Pasuk Elohehem Al Hehorim, that the Getchkes that they would put on top of the mountains, Eloi Hehorim Elohehem, if they worship the mountain itself, so the mountain remains Muta Bahanoa. So the Gemara says, number one, that then only applies to the mountain itself, karka itself, or to a tree which is growing in the ground, took roots and it's growing on the ground. What if you have a telephone pole, or what if you have a building? The building is mechuba lakarka, but it's a low hishrish. It didn't take roots. That's called tolush of the besof chibroi. I had bricks, I had beams, I attach them to the ground, and it's not like planting a tree that it takes roots. It's Tolda Shalabasav Chibro. So the Gemara discusses buildings, Tolda Shalabasav Chibro, with respect to different dinim. Sometimes it has the status of Mechuber, sometimes it has the status of Tolush. So the Gemara says, with respect to Avodah Zarah, a building has the status of Tolush. Tolda Shalabasav Chibro, a building is considered like Tolush, and it can become Asa Bahanoa. So in Shulchan Aruch it says, Rabbi Yitzchak Yochanan has tshuvas about this, Rabbi Moshe Feinstein has tshuvas about this, that the din is that if the Nochrim had a church and then they sell it to us as a private residence, or they sell it to us as a Beis HaKnesses, so they understand that it's no longer by their selling it, it's no longer going to be used as a base of Avodah Zarah. So the Shulchan Aruch, the Mishnayos assume, quoted in Shulchan Aruch, whenever the Nachri sells it, then he understands it will no longer be used as a base of Avodah Zarah, that itself constitutes an act of bittul. So the Isser HaNor LeHedyot goes off. However, it's still Pasul Agavoa. You're not allowed to use that building to make the Beis HaMikdash over there. So the Gemara has a suffix. What about for other mitzvahs? What if it's not Beis HaMikdash, Beis HaMikdash? What if it's for other mitzvahs? Does Mechuba become Pasul L'Shar Mitzvahs? So we are Machmer on that, that convert a church, a Trinitarian church that was actually used for Avodah Zarah, to convert a church to a Beis HaKnesses is usher. Even though by their selling it, that constitutes an act of bittul, but still we assume it's ma'us lagavaya for all mitzvahs. If it would have been a Unitarian church, or if it would have been a mosque, if it's Gohana writes, if it would have been a mosque, they believe in one God. It's not the Jewish religion, but it's not Avodah Zarah for Bnei Noach. So that's not considered Mo'us Lagavaya. So to convert a mosque into a shul, or to convert a Unitarian church into a shul, that would be permissible. But to convert a Trinitarian church into a shul, that would be forbidden. The reverse, if you have a shul and you want to sell it, so the Gemara says that the members of the board should announce in advance that they're going to have a public meeting, and they should explain at the meeting what's motivating them to sell the shul, because it's no longer used as a Beis HaKnesses. All the Mispalim moved out of the neighborhood, doesn't pay to keep it functioning. So the Gemara says, the Zayin Tuvi who here, the members of the board have the right to sell the shul, even if the purchaser is going to use the shul for a Bizayindik practice. He was going to convert it into a bar. What if he knows in advance that he's not going to convert it into a bar, he's going to make it into a church for an Avodah Zarah? So that we mentioned the other day. That was a big machlokes 60, 70 years ago between Rav Moshe Feinstein and many other Rabbanim. Other Rabbanim said that to use the Beis HaKnesses as a church is the same bizayin as making a bar out of it, making a saloon out of it. The Gemara says that it's mutter to make a bar, so it's mutter to sell it to make a church. Rav Moshe Feinstein insisted that this is worse. To sell a Beis HaKnesses, that they should make an Avodah Zarah temple out of it, is worse than selling it L'mishti Be'Shichra, to drink beer there. So Rav Moshe's opinion, generally speaking, in this area was accepted. Most of the Rabbanim in America accepted Rav Moshe's psak, that it's not at all proper to sell a Beis HaKnesses knowing in advance that it's going to be used for a church. If the members of the board sell a Beis HaKnesses to a private individual who planned to make a residence out of it, and then he decided later on, at the time we sold it to the private individual, our understanding was he's going to move in there, he's going to make a home out of it. And he later on decides to sell it again, to sell it to a church, and that's not our problem. We didn't do anything wrong. But to do it as an act of haramah, to sell it to a private person, to do it, then he should sell it to the church. And we know quite well from the outset that that's the plan, that the private person is going to sell it to the church. And that's where Moshe Feinstein felt that that's not permissible. That's considered worse than selling it as to a company who wants to make a bar at it. Our abayas would be empty and in our hands, and we would have the ability to build the Beis HaMikdash. So we have a mitzvah to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. We have a mitzvah to build the Beis HaMikdash. Everybody's tomei. So how can we enter the Har Abayas? So the Gemara says, no, for the purpose of building the Beis HaMikdash, that is permissible. That's the Gemara at the end of the Erevin. For the purpose of building the Beis HaMikdash, of fixing up the rooms in the Beis HaMikdash, if need be, you can even send in a tummy. Rav Kook made that Gemara popular. When when they were speaking about rebuilding Eretz Yisrael, Ayidei Hachilonim, Gefelach, how can it be that this is an Aschalta de Gula, the Chilonim are rebuilding Eretz Yisrael, Zayin Adachtameim? So he said, he quoted that Gemara, that if you want to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, it's permissible to send in Tameim. The question is, would the Mokam HaMikdash be endowed with Kedusha, would we be able to bring Karbanos if we'll build the Beis HaMikdash? So this is a big dispute between the Tanoim and the Amoraim. Should we assume that from day number one, when Shlomo HaMelech built the first Beis HaMikdash, it was Kitchalasi Lavai, the Beis HaMikdash was endowed with Kedusha, and it lasted, Arayim Azat still has that Kedusha, that's the Rambam's position. The Makam HaMikdash was Kitchalasi Lavai, and when we'll rebuild the third Beis HaMikdash, we won't have to be Mechanachet. There's no need to be Mechanachet. Like Moshe Rabbeinu had to make Chanukah Samishkan, had to have Shiva Simea Miluim, the last 7 days in Chodesh Ador, and the first 12 days in Chodesh Nissan, Yom HaShmini LeMiluim was Rosh Chodesh Nissan, and every day, each one of the Nisiyim brought the special Karbonus, and then when Shlomo HaMelech built the first Beis HaMikdash, he also did Chanukah HaMikdash. But if you say Kitchelosi Lover, then there won't be any need at all to do any Chanukah Beis HaMikdash. Just rebuild it, and that's all, and we'll be able to be Makar of Karbonus. According to the Ravid, Ravid says that he knows, based on Kabbalah, that's what it sounds, the Rabbi writes, based on Kabbalah, he knows that the Makam HaMikdash has lost its Kedusha. And if we'll build the third Beis HaMikdash, we'll have to be Mechanachet, we'll have to be Mekadoshet. And in order to be Mekadoshet Beis HaMikdash, whoa, that's a whole effort. You have to have a Sanhedrin, and you have to have Urim Betumim, and you have to have a Navi. We're missing everything. We don't have a Navi, we don't have Urim Betumim, we don't have a Melech, we don't have a Sanhedrin. We're missing all of these things. So according to the Ravid, we wouldn't accomplish anything by rebuilding the Beis HaMikdash, because we'll have to be Mekadosh everything all over again, and we're missing the authorities who are needed to be Mekadosh. You need either one of these or all of these. Sanhedrin, Navi, Melech, Urim Betumim. The Gemara in Shavuos has a machlokes Amoraim, whether Echad Mikol Eilu Tanan or Bechol Eilu Tanan. We have none of these. So we wouldn't be able, according to the Ravid, if we rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, we wouldn't accomplish anything. But according to the Rambam, you would. The question is it necessary to wait till Moshiach comes in order to build the Beis HaMikdash? Many people assume, how can you build the Beis HaMikdash before Moshiach comes? So the Taisus Yontif comments on Mishnayos in the end of Maseches Maaseh Sheni. He quotes from the Talmud Yerushalmi a comment on the Mishnah, that Yerushalmi says, you see from the Mishnah that the Tanaim assumed that the Beis HaMikdash would be rebuilt before the coming of Moshiach. So it's not really necessary. We're not so sure which is going to come first, whether Moshiach is going to come first and authorize the building of the Beis HaMikdash, or the Beis HaMikdash will be built first. The Rambam writes, we're not sure. Rambam, in the end of Mishneh Torah, writes a lot about the coming of Moshiach. So he writes, we're not sure exactly in what order all of these things are going to appear. Is Eliyahu HaNavi going to come? Eliyahu Navi is going to come before the Melech HaMashiach. That's how the Talmud interprets that pasuk. The Bo Yom Hashem is the day of the coming of Mashiach. And other Amoraim seem to hold the reverse, that first Mashiach will come, and only afterwards Eliyahu Navi will come. So the Rambam writes, we're not sure what the Seder HaDvarim will be, but the first Eliyahu, first Beis HaMikdash, first Melech HaMashiach. He says, we just know all of these things are going to happen, and when they will take place, we'll understand what the correct order is, but we have no way of knowing in advance. And the Tosfos Yontif quotes from the Talmud Yerushalmi, commenting on the Mishnah at the end of Maseches Maaser Sheni, that Zoso Meris, from the Mishnah, you can infer that it's there exists the possibility of the Beis HaMikdash being rebuilt before Melech HaMashiach comes. Build the third Beis HaMikdash, it automatically has its Kedusha. There's no need for us to be Mekadosh it. Then we should go ahead. If we have the ability to, we should go ahead and build the Beis HaMikdash. If you assume, like the Ravid, that you have to be Mekadosh the third Beis HaMikdash, and we don't have the ability to, so it wouldn't make sense to go build some other structure there. What? We're going to have to rip it down. When it'll be time to build the Beis HaMikdash, we'll have to take it down. Just be an obstacle. Even according to the Ravid, who says that the Mokam HaMikdash does not retain its Kedusha, the Rambam writes that the Mokam HaMikdash is Kitshe Lo Silov, retained its Kedusha from the day number one on, from the day that Shlomo HaMelech built it. So the Rambam writes, therefore, if an Odom Tomei, if a man or a woman who's Tomei, goes into the Mokam Beis HaMikdash today, El Bichayv Koris. The Ravid disagrees. He thinks that it's Loikit Shalasi Lavoi. The Makam HaMikdash does not have Kedusha. And he thinks that therefore there's no Koris if a Tomei enters. But from the Ravid it would appear as if he also agrees that a Tomei is not permitted to enter. It's not that according to the Ravid we would permit Tomeiim to enter the Beis HaMikdash. Sounds like he also agrees it's not permissible, but he says if you want to say that there's Koris, the burden of proof is on you. He would assume that the Makam HaMikdash is loy kitcha losi lova. I said, well, if it's loy kitcha, why is it prohibited to let an Adam Tomei go? So that's a big discussion in commentaries on the Ravid. Why does he seem to imply that it's prohibited for the Tomei to enter the Harba? It's just that he's not chayv koris for entering. Build a Beis HaMikdash, will we succeed in finding enough Kohanim who will be able to be makrid the korbanos? That's a very good question. In the beginning of the period of the Bayis Sheni, it's recorded in Sefer Ezra that when Ezra was schlepping Bnei Yisrael back from Bavel to go back to the Beis HaMikdash, the whole purpose of coming back was to complete the building of the Beis HaMikdash and to be makrid korbanos. So he asked all of the Kohanim, Bikshu Ksavam HaMisyachsim, he asked them to produce a Ksav Yichas. Each one should document, I am the son of so-and-so, the son of so-and-so, son of so-and-so, who is Makriv Karbanis Bizman Bayis Rishon. It wasn't such a long gap, it was only 70 years in between. So it wasn't so complicated to remember. I don't know who my grandfather's father was, but that's really more than 70 years ago. No, I did. My grandfather's father, I do know. His name was Herschel. He was a Sheikhet. Herschel Sheikhet. But my grandfather's father's father, I don't know. I don't know that far. But they didn't have to know so far. So they only permitted Kohanim to be Makar of Karbanis at the beginning of the period of the Bayis Sheni if they had a Ksav Yichas. Those who are Kohani Chazoka, they were assumed, all the 70 years of Golas Bavel, they were assumed to be Kohanim. They were duchening, they were performing Pidyon HaBen, they were getting the first Aliyah. All fine and good, but we wouldn't permit them to be Makriv Karbanos if they're only Kohani Chazaka. They have to be Kohanim Miyuchasim. So until the middle 1800s, it was assumed by the earlier Poskim that the reason for this is that all the Kohanim is Manazah, Safik Kohanim. We're not really so convinced that they're Kohanim. So therefore, how can we permit them to be makriv karbanos if a zar shavad is misa b'dei shamayim, a zar karev yumos, if a non-kayin is makriv karbanos in the Beis HaMikdash, that's considered a very serious avera. So we So we would consider all the Kohanim as Manazeh, Safik Kohanim. Then during the lifetime of Rabbi Akiva Eger and the Chasam Sefer, Chasam Sefer was the son-in-law of Rabbi Akiva Eger. Chasam Sefer had three wives. The first wife died, and he married as a second wife the daughter of Rabbi Akiva Eger. She also died, and he married a third wife. It happens that Rabbi Akiva Eger was 1 year older than his son-in-law, the Chasam Sefer, and he died 1 year before him. They lived to the same age, just that Rabbi Akiva Eger was 1 year ahead of him. So, during the lifetime of Rabbi Akiva Eger, one of the students of Rabbi Akiva Eger, Rabbi Tzvi Hirsch Kalosher, was very fired up about the possibility. He never visited Eretz Yisrael, and he didn't realize that there's a mosque on the Makom HaMikdash, and it's in the Tovas Tereden. There's nothing to discuss. And he didn't realize that the Arab Galach, I forgot what he called him, the one in charge of the Makom HaMikdash, didn't permit any Jews even to walk there. So there was nothing to discuss. But he had this dream that maybe we should rebuild the Beis HaMikdash and we should be makriv the Karbanos, and he's going to solve all the problems. So he wrote a whole sefer called Drishas Tzion about the possibility of rebuilding the Beis HaMikdash, making a mizbech and being makriv Karbanos. Hi, everybody's tummy. So he solved that problem, and he solves all the problems. He thinks that he solved all the problems. And then he has the problem, but we don't have enough Kohanim Yuchasim. There aren't enough Kohanim Yuchasim. The overwhelming majority, over 99% of the Kohanim in the world, are only Kohani Chazaka. They're duchening, they're performing Pinyin HaBen, they're getting the first Aliyah, but they don't have a Ksav Yichas that goes all the way back to the times of the Bais Sheni, to the times of the Bais Rishon, that indicates that their ancestors were Makriv Karbanos in the Beis HaMikdash. How can we allow them to be Makriv Karbanos? So Rabbi Tzvi Hirsch Kalosher and his Sefer suggested a chiddush that the requirement for Kohanim Yuchasim for the purpose of Hakrobas Karbanos was only a chumrah midirabbanan that was instituted by Ezra, because it was possible to run a Beis HaMikdash without the Kohanim, Kohani Chazaka. There were enough Kohanim Yuchasim to run the Beis HaMikdash. But if you come to a generation like today, that if you'll rebuild the Beis HaMikdash and you'll insist on only allowing Kohanim Yuchasim to be Makar of Karbanos, you simply won't be able to be Makar of any Karbanos. There are hardly any Kohanim Yuchasim today. So then Rabbi Tzvi Hirsch Kalosher suggested that the Chumrah Midrabbanan probably doesn't apply. The Chumrah only makes sense Midrabbanan if you can observe the Chumrah in Echad Teisa, why not? But if it'll just cripple the possibility of being Makar, it will be Mevatel the whole mitzvah. So the Ki HaGavne doesn't make sense that the Chachamim should have been Machmir. So he sent his whole Sefer to his Rebbe, to Rabbi Akiva Eger. Rabbi Akiva Eger was masking with everything in the Sefer. We should rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, even Mashiach didn't come. We should be Makar of Karbanos. Rabbi Akiva Eger was a Tmimis Nika Holy Tzaddik. He didn't realize either that there was a mosque, and he didn't realize either that the Arab Galach in charge of the Harabais wouldn't let a Yehudi even step foot on the Makom HaMikdash. He was a Tmimis Nika Tzaddik. The Chasam Sefer was a man of the world, and he knew that there's nothing to discuss. He knew history, he knew biology, he knew many more things outside of learning. So he said that the whole plan is chalaumas. There's nothing to discuss now. There's a mosque and so on. But he was maskim halacha lemaisa with the chiddush of Rabbi Tzvi Hirsch Kalosher. So from that time on, from the time of Rabbi Akiva Eger and the Chasam Sefer, Rabbi Tzvi Hirsch Kalosher, the accepted position is that Kohanim is manazeh, avadai kohanim. They're not considered Sofik Kohanim. If they would be Sofik Kohanim, how can they say a bracha on duchening? How can they say a bracha on pinyin HaBen? If it's only a Sofik Kohanim, of course it's avadai kohanim. And it's only a chumrah midirabbanan that we don't permit Kohani Chazaka to be makariv karbanis. But if we would build the Beis HaMikdash today, we wouldn't have enough Kohanim to be makariv. We would be makal on the din derabbanan. This din derabbanan was never intended to be observed if it's simply going to cripple the possibility of offering karbanis. Titus.
March of Titus.
They have a famous image of the people carrying the menorah. So the way they draw the menorah, the six Kani HaMenorah are semicircles. They're in the shape of an arc. The past Lubavitcher Rebbe had his Chiddush, based on his reading of the Rambam in his commentary on the Mishnayos HaMenachos, that the six Kanim are supposed to be V-shaped. Supposed to come to a point. Supposed to be straight and coming to a point. Not supposed to be arc-shaped. And many of the Lubavitcher treat their sect of Lubavitch as if it's a separate religion that requires its own symbol. Like the Jewish religion more or less has the symbol of the Magen David, even though Al-Pidin it plays no role whatsoever. Magen David is neither here nor there, has nothing to do with the Jewish religion, but the Magen David is a symbol of the Jewish religion. You have a shul that has a Magen David, and the Tzelem is the symbol of Christianity. So the menorah, the way the last Rebbe described it, that has now become the symbol of their sect. They're so convinced that their Rebbe is right, so they adopted that as the symbol of Lubavitch. So this will remain to be seen when we're going to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. What shape will the Kanei HaMenorah have? Will it be like the Lubavitch Rebbe said, or will it be the way it appears on the Arch of Titus? It's not like the Lubavitcher Rebbe, that it's an arc, it's not straight. Okay.
Archaeology?
That's a question. Whom do you believe, the archaeology or the Rebbe? Who's more reliable? Okay. On Friday we expect to visit the Roman and Yankov is one of the three others, Avraham, Yitzchak and Yankov, one of the forefathers of the Jewish religion. So the Chachamim and the Midrashim always refer to the Christians and the Christian religion as Esav and Edom. And Esav is referred to as the Chazir in Midrashim and in the Gemara. Why the Chazir? So Rashi and Chumash explains, in order to be a kosher animal, you have to be Malagera Mafis Parasa. The Chazir has the Mafis Parasa, but it doesn't have the malagera. So the chazir will sometimes stick out its hoofs to say, look at me, I'm kosher, I'm a min tohar, I have mafris parsa. The chazir tries to fool the public into believing that it's really kosher, but it's really a treifa behemah. That's why the chachamim in the midrashim and in the gemara often refer to the Christian religion and to the Christians as the Chazir, in the sense that they're trying to claim that they are the Yam HaNivchar. This was so for many, many years, for many generations. They claim, yes, the Jewish people were the chosen nation, the Yam HaNivchar, until they rejected Jesus. Once they rejected Osa HaIsh, then we lost our status as Yam HaNivchar, and they became the Yam HaNivchar. That's what they claimed for many generations. And then at the beginning of the Zionist movement, which was over 100 years ago, the reaction of the church in all of their newspapers in all languages in different countries in the world, in America, in English, and in Italy, in their language, and in Europe, all over the world, in Spanish and French, they all wrote, it's never going to happen. Zionism is an impossibility. Calls man that the Jews haven't accepted Osa HaYish, they are not the Yam HaNivchar. And Eretz Yisrael is the Eretz HaNivcheres that only goes to the Yam HaNivchar. It's impossible, it's never going to happen. Not that they were opposed to Zionism, but according to their Gleipen, according to their Animamins, it's never going to happen. After the Medina was established, this was a shock to them. So they didn't recognize the Medina for something like 45 or 50 years, till about 10, 15 years ago. I don't remember the exact year. They didn't recognize the Medina for many years because This was an impossibility. They were hoping and praying to the Yoshke that the Medina was going to disappear. But the prayers were not answered, and the hopes were not fulfilled. So they had to figure out a teretz. How can it be? But we've been preaching for so many years that the Jewish people lost their status as Am HaNivchar, and it's impossible that they should control the Eretz HaNivcheres, Eretz Yisrael, the Eretz HaNivcheres. How can it be? So after a few years, after Hakamas HaMedina, they came up with the following teretz, that the real Eretz HaNivcheres is the Eretz HaOvos, where Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov lived, Hebron, Ir Atika, Yerushalayim, but Tel Aviv, that's the modern Israel, and Jerusalem that the Jews got when they ended the Melchemet HaShechrua, that's the modern Jerusalem. The real Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh, the Ir Atika, was not in the hands of the Jews. This is never going to happen. Cannot be that Hebron, the Ir Atika, will ever be in the hands of the Jews. Then after a few years went by, there was the Melchemet Sheshet Hayamim. So the Jewish armies took over the Ir Atika, and they took over Hebron. So what was the response? This was a pircha, this is an upgeschlag in the ganze teretz of the Catholic Church. So the reaction of the Pope the very next day, after the conclusion of Melchemet Sheshet Hayamim, was, and still is, Ad Hayom Hazeh, that Jerusalem has to be internationalized. You cannot allow Yerushalayim to be in the hands of the Jewish people. This position of the Pope is not because the Pope is looking for peace. It's because the Pope is trying to defend his belief. He's trying to defend his religious animamen. They claim that the Jews lost the status as Am HaNivchar, and until we will accept Osa HaYish, we will not have the ability to control Eretz Yisrael, which is the Eretz HaNivcheres. So they said we have to. So they boiled it down to the Ir Atika, their emuna. Then they said the Jews have to give away Ir Atika. It doesn't bother them if the Arabs have it. The Arabs are not in their running, as far as they're concerned. Only the Jews are in their running. The Catholic Church always speaks about the twin religions, the Jewish religion and the Catholic religion. Yaakov and Esav, as we know from the Chumash, were twins. So they speak about the Judeo-Christian tradition. We have twin traditions. Truth of the matter, we have nothing in common with the Christians. Christianity started off as Judaism, and then it went off on its own merry way. It has nothing at all to do with Judaism anymore. We don't believe in the Trinity. We believe in Hashem Echad. I remember years ago, there was a British philosopher by the name of Bertrand Russell. So he put out a few books on philosophy. One book was entitled A Dictionary of Philosophy. And I once saw the cover of the book, The Dictionary of Philosophy. So I was curious to see what it's all about. So I turned to the letter A, and I saw under the letter A he has the word alphabet, arithmetic. Under the letter A, he has arithmetic. Has a galach with a collar backwards, teaching young little children arithmetic, writing on the blackboard, arithmetic, 1 plus 1 plus 1 equals 1. Because they believe in Hashem Echad, and they believe in the Trinity. So we believe that 1 plus 1 plus 1 equals 3, it doesn't equal 1. You have nothing in common. There's no twin religion, and there's no Judeo-Christian tradition. It's a garnish, min garnish. We have nothing in common with the Nachrim. The Rambam, in one of his famous longer letters, yes, short letters, and he has very long essays, one of his longer Igarot, writes, Moshol Amah Adov Adoyme, the twin religion. He says, what if you have a human being standing next to a statue? Would anybody mistake the statue as a human being? We see the human being is breathing. We feel him. You feel the body is warm. The statue is cold. It's not breathing. It's not batting an eyelash. How can anybody put Judaism next to Christianity and think that they're twins? He says one is for real and one is a fake. One is an imitation. One is a statue. They have nothing in common. But the Catholics are not prepared to give in on this issue. They were fudging a little bit a few years ago. They had a conference of their cardinals. Every couple of years they have a conference, and they keep on changing their religion, keep on changing their animamis. So they supposedly they touched up this issue, but they still don't believe that the Jews are the Amanifcha. They still hold that they are the Amanifcha. For many years, the cardinals used to come to New York and meet with representatives of the Jewish religion. None of the Orthodox rabbis were interested in meeting with them. They used to meet with the Reform and the Conservative. After about 50 years of meeting with the Reform and the Conservative, they finally came to the realization, they came to the conclusion that the Reform and the Conservative do not represent Judaism. They decided only the Orthodox. So they don't want to meet anymore with the Reform and the Conservative. They only meet with the Orthodox. So they come every year. They meet representatives. They went to Babov, they went to Lubavitch, they went to Satna, they went to Torah V'Das, they went to RJJ. And we, Yeshiva University, also, we are also the lucky winners. We have to meet with them also. So just a few months ago, we met with them. But we contacted them in advance that we have guidelines from Rav Soloveitchik that we can't discuss anything theological. We can only discuss helping mankind, how we can help mankind. So they said they were trying to dray. So they said, well, they want to talk about trying to introduce the Ten Commandments to the whole world. So basically, this is also theological. But they were trying to dray that it's trying to improve the whole world. So we met with them. So they were hacking one galach. I'm just afraid I'm going to walk in the streets in Rome. They're going to recognize me. Because I met these cardinals for the last 6 years, year after year. So one of the cardinals gave a whole presentation. So he kept on talking about the Ten Commandments. The Ten Commandments was a covenant with mankind. God made the covenant with mankind. We don't observe Sabbath the way you do. We observe it a little differently. A little differently? I'll tell you, a little differently. They have no concept at all of Malacha. It's nothing, no Kiddush. It has nothing to do with anything. No similarity living or dead. It's not even like a statue next to a human being. It's less than that. It's not even twins. So he kept on hacking that it's a covenant with mankind, a covenant with mankind. So Dr. Lamb had to correct him, and he said, I beg your pardon, it was a covenant with the Jewish people only. Shabbos is only for the Jewish people. These mitzvahs are only for the Jewish people. There were covenants that were made with all of mankind. After the Mabul, the Rabbanu Shalom made a covenant that he's never going to bring another Mabul. There were other covenants made. And the Oisa Bris is the Keshes, the rainbow. But the Bris at Har Sinai was a Bris with the Jewish people. So the Galach didn't chap what he said. So one of the other Rabbanim had to set the record straight. Still didn't chap. So a few of the other Rabbanim, I didn't want to say anything. I never speak at these meetings. So a few of the other Rabbanim kept on explaining to the Galochim. They kept on explaining to the Galochim that there was a covenant at Har Sinai. But the covenant was only with the Jewish people. Even though officially they recognize that the Jewish people are the Aman Yivchar several years ago, but they themselves don't believe it. They still believe that they are the Aman Yivchar. And it's just Lefanim, it's just a fakerai that they say that they changed their position. David mentioned before that Josephus was a Kohen in the Beis HaMikdash, and he describes the different buildings of the Beis HaMikdash, the different rooms, different chambers. So this poses a major problem. We have in Seder Kochim, we have Mishnayos, Maseches Midos, which gives you all the different rooms, different chambers, and the different measurements for all the rooms. And there are contradictions between Josephus and the Mishnayos and Midos, so this poses a problem. So there are several fascinating svarim that were written on this topic. You have to have patience, you have to have the interest in reading these kind of things. I don't have the interest. One of the svarim was authored written in German, written by a Rabbi Azriel Hildesheimer, not the famous one. I think it was his grandson. And it was recently translated, recently about 30, 40 years ago. I think it was translated into Hebrew. So the thrust of his thesis is that there are contradictions between Josephus also, from different volumes of Josephus. He wrote several books. So he tries to work on the contradictions within Josephus' Gufa in order to make everything shtim, that it should correspond to what it says in the Gemara. About the revolt of Bar Kochva, it's very interesting. His real name, we assume, was Shimon Bar Kuziva. And Rabbi Akiva gave him the nickname Bar Kochva because he thought that it could well be that this man will turn out to be the Melech HaMashiach. And the Pasuk says in Parshas Balak, Dorach Kochav Miyankiv, Bekom Shevet BiYisrael. And that Pasuk is referring to the Bias HaMashiach. Dorach Kochav Miyankiv. So because Rabbi Akiva thought that Bar Kochva could be the Melech HaMashiach, so they gave him a nickname, Bar Kochva. He's the Dorach Kochav Miyankiv. The other Tanoim disagreed with Rabbi Akiva. And they told him, it's Adayin Lo Higia Hazman, it's not yet the time for Mashiach to come. That when God created the world, there's a plan in the world. The first 2,000 years from Adam Rishon, starting from Adam Rishon, is the world of Tohu, before there was any Torah on the world. If you look in Bereshis and Noach, you just calculate how old Adam Rishon was when Shes was born, how old was Shes when Enosh was born, Adam Shes, Enosh, Kenan, Mahalalel, etc., etc. So if you just make the arithmetic calculations, the Gemara points out that Avraham Avinu was born in the year 1948, Libriya Sa'ilam. When Avraham Avinu reached the age of 52, that was the year 2000, Libriya Sa'ilam. So the Gemara says we have a historical tradition that when Avraham Avinu reached the age of 52, in the year 2000, Libriya Sa'ilam, he started to preach monotheism to all the people. Nefesh Asher Osa Becharon means that Avraham Avinu was preaching monotheism. That's considered the beginning of Shnei Alofim Torah. The first 2,000 years were considered Shnei Alofim Tohu, 2,000 years of lacking Torah. And then the next 2,000 years are considered Shnei Alofim Torah. Shnei Alofim Torah ended in the year 4,000 Libriya Sa'olam. That was approximately the time that Rabbeinu HaKadosh passed away. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, the editor of the Mishnayos, that's the cutoff point between the Tanoim and the Amoraim, that's roughly speaking the end of the 2,000 years of Torah. And then the last 2,000 years, that's what the other Tanoim had a tradition, the world is only going to last for 6,000 years. What exactly is going to happen after the year 6,000 is unclear in the Gemara. Gemara says it's going to be Chorev. What exactly does that mean? So the Ramchal, Moshe Chaim Letzata, has a whole sefer where he discusses this. The 6,000 years and so on. The Rekeach writes in his commentary on Chumash that in the opening Pasuk Bereshis, Boru Elokim, Es HaShemayim, Es HaOretz, there are six Alephs that represent the six Alephim, the 6,000 years. Aleph is Aleph, 1,000 years. So the other Tanoim tell Rabbi Akiva, that's impossible. Bar Kochva should be the Melech HaMashiach. It's too early. We haven't yet reached the year 4000 Libriya Sa'olam. We have a tradition, Shnei Alofim Tohu, the world is only going to last 6,000 years. Shnei Alofim Tohu, with no Torah, Shnei Alofim Torah, and only in the last unit of 2,000 years is it possible to have Shnei Alofim Imos HaMashiach. Is it roi for the coming of the Mashiach? So they told Rabbi Akiva that you're going to be dead and buried and pushing daisies. Grass is going to be growing on your grave. That's why they said, Yalu asavim bilchoyecho, grass will be growing on your cheeks above your grave. But dying ben David lopo, Mashiach will still not have come. We believe an imamin bebias haMashiach b'choyoy machakala b'choyoy machakala. The Gemara says is beginning from the year 4000. But before the year 4000, unless the Ribbono Shel Olam is going to change his plan, once in a while we do change our plans. But unless the Ribbono Shel Olam lo yishel v'yechazeh v'ven adam v'yisnecham, Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't change his plans so often. There was a hava mina that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would make, how does the Gemara say, Chizkiyo HaMelech, into the Melech HaMashiach, I think. But that fell through. But that would have been a change of plan. The original plan was that Mashiach would not come before the year 4000 Libriya Sa'ibu. So that's what the others disagreed with Rabbi Akiva. They thought that it's impossible that Bar Kochba should be the Melech HaMashiach because it's not yet within the last unit of 2000 years. We have brises that were written before the year 4000 Libriya Sa'ibu. And the Brisa recommends that people should not buy real estate in Chutzla Aretz soon before the year 4000. They may lose their investment. Mashiach can come any time, any day, starting from the year 4000. And whoever bought real estate in Chutzla Aretz is going to run to Eretz Yisrael because Mashiach is going to come. And his Nachri neighbors will know that that he has to leave. He's running to Eretz Yisrael. And I'll buy his $1 million home for a dollar, or for half a dollar. Because no one is going to be interested in paying any big money, because the Jews will all leave and go to Eretz Yisrael. That's how the Gemara says. The Gemara tells the story of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was the chief rabbi at the time of the Churban Bayis Sheni. So Vespasian Aspasianus was the general of the army, and he wasn't yet aware of the fact that the emperor had died, and the Senate in Rome, I guess, had elected him, had chosen him as to be serving as the next emperor. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai smuggled his way out of Yerushalayim. There was the Romans had a siege around Yerushalayim, and the Jewish gangsters weren't allowing any Jews to defect to the enemy to surrender. They had this attitude that there's a mitzvah to fight till the end. You're not allowed to surrender to the enemy, and even if it means that you lose every Jewish life. That's the attitude that they had in different places in Eretz Yisrael, but that was at Matzada, but that was Shalopritz on Chachamim. We hold that it's a Melchemes mitzvah to maintain Eretz Yisrael and Jewish control. A Melchemes mitzvah is only if you're pretty sure that you're going to win. You're pretty positive that you're going to win. But if you're not sure that you're going to win, so there's no mitzvah to fight a losing battle. It's only a mitzvah to fight if you cannot zicha that you're going to win the war. No mitzvah to lose every Jewish life. So Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai had to smuggle his way out through the blockade that the Jewish gangsters had. They didn't allow anyone to go surrender. And when he reached the Roman camp, so he told them, I'm the chief rabbi, I represent all the Jewish people, and we are surrendering. You're surrendering, and don't kill all the people. Take us slaves, don't kill us. So he told Vespasian at the time, the Gemara tells a whole funny story, Aspasianus had put on one shoe and he couldn't put on, and then Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai tells him that you should know that you were just elected the emperor of Rome. And then he found out that it was true. Soon afterwards, the messenger came from Rome and told him. So he was so appreciative to Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, and he was so taken by his chachma, by the way he spoke. So he said, like Rabbi Nachman said the other day, he asked for 3 wishes, and I'll grant all the 3 wishes. So he asked for insignificant things. He asked, Tein li Yavne v'chachameho, don't destroy the city Yavne, allow the rabbis to continue to convene the Sanhedrin and Yavne, and don't kill the descendants of David HaMelech, don't kill the descendants of the Malchus Beis David. And then he requested a refuah for one of the Tanoim, who was fasting Tanesim. Rabbi Tzadik was fasting Tanesim for so many years that the Ribbono Shel Olam shouldn't destroy the Beis HaMikdash, so he was skinny like a toothpick. So they needed the doctors to treat him, to heal him, and he should come back to his normal weight, like many of the Jews after the Second World War, after the Holocaust, after the war was over, Then the Allies came and they freed them in the concentration camps. So many of them lost their lives when they started to eat normal food. They weren't healthy enough to eat food. They had to eat little by little. So he asked for the Roman doctors should treat the Tana Reb Tzadik and bring him back to normal health. So the Gemara says, what a mistake he made. Aspasianus was so respectful of the Tana, Rabbi Chmazaka, the chief rabbi, he should have requested that they shouldn't destroy the Beis HaMikdash. Take us as slaves, do whatever you want, take all the money. He should have requested, don't destroy the Beis HaMikdash. He would have honored the request. So the Gemara explains psychologically that Rabbi Chmazaka made the mistake. The Gemara says it was a mistake. Rabbi Chmazaka made the mistake because he thought, if I'll ask for too much, then they won't give me anything. If they give you three requests, if the government is going to give you the death penalty, they give you three requests, and you're going to ask, don't kill me, so that's not a reasonable request. They're not going to listen. So if they're having a siege on Yerushalayim for so long, so Rabbi Chmazaka thought they wouldn't listen to it. But the Gemara says, not so. If he would have, Rabbi Chmazaka would have requested that they shouldn't destroy the Beis HaMikdash, they would have listened to him. So how can it be that he made such a major mistake? So the Gemara quotes the pasuk from Mishlei, I think, Meshiv Chachamim Ochor V'daitam Yisakel, that sometimes the Rabbanu Shel Olam takes away the Bechira Chavshis from the leaders of the Jewish people, and he puts foolishness into their mind. V'daitam Yisakel, like a Sochal, a fool. The Rabbanu Shel Olam suspended the Bechira Chavshis in the thinking ability of the Holy Tanner, Rabbi Yechman Zakkai. Rabbi Shlomo was angry at Klal Yisrael. He wanted to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. So he thought to it that Rabbi Yechman Zakkai should not give the right answer. He should not make the right request. That's the passage in the Gemara that Rabbi Soloveitchik used to quote when people would ask him, how can it be that when so many Rabbanim were asked before the Second World War, should we go to Eretz Yisrael? They all said no. They were all opposed to Zionism. So it's all their fault that so many Jews were killed. Look, they made such a terrible mistake. How can you believe in Das Torah? How can you rely on what the Rabbanim say? Look what happened in the Second World War. They all said the wrong answer. Everyone should stay where they are. You shouldn't go to America. You shouldn't go to Eretz Yisrael. So Rav Soloveitchik is to say that that was Min HaShamayim. That is Meshiv Chachamim Mochor. Daitam Yisakal. You have to ask the Rabbanim. Sometimes when the Rabban Shel Olam has a certain plan and he wants to bring about utter destruction, so he suspends the Bechira Chavshis of the Chachamim and he causes them to give a foolish answer, because that's what he wants. We don't know why the Rabban Shalom wanted to cause such a churban. If the Rabban Shalom would not have wanted it, it would certainly not have happened. Shlomo HaMelech writes in Mishlei, Palge Mayim Leib Melech B'Yad Hashem Kol HaShayach Patz Yatenu. The heart of the king, Leib Melech, is in the hands of HaKadosh Baruch Hu B'Yad Hashem like Palge Mayim. It's not like a big river that if you want to divert the direction you have to, it's going to be a major undertaking. It's like a little trickle of water, like a little flow of water. Palge Mayim, it's easy, you just put your hand there and the direction of the water will be diverted. So Shlomo HaMelech writes in Mishlei, Palge Mayim Leib Melech B'Yad Hashem. It's easy for the Rabbanu Shel Olam to control the heart of the king. So the Ralbag in his commentary on Mishlei has a long, long essay there where he explains it cannot be, we cannot believe that Hitler had Bechira Chavshis, that any national or international leader as Bechira Chavshis to do such terrible things, to cause people to lose their lives or to cause people to lose their wealth and so on and so forth. We cannot believe that Obama is a free person and he makes all these decisions on his own. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will allow one individual to destroy the whole world. It must be that the Rabbanu Shel Olam has this plan in mind and he's using these individuals as pawns. The Bechira Chavshis of all of the world's leaders is always suspended. The Bechira Chavshis, maybe to use this toothpaste or that toothpaste, but they don't have Bechira Chavshis to make decisions that affect other people. So that's what the Gemara says in connection with Rabbi Yechman Zakkai's mistake. There is a famous Gemara in Bava Kamma. The Gemara says when the shepherd is angry at his flock, he will put a blind sheep in front, and all of the other sheep will follow the blind sheep, and the blind sheep doesn't know, can't see where he's going. So he's going to stumble, he's going to fall, and all the other sheep will follow, and they'll all fall. So the Gemara gives this mashal to imply that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is angry at Bnei Yisrael, it'll cause the leaders of the Jewish people, always follow their leaders, it'll cause the leaders to mislead. They'll put blind bats in positions of leadership, and they will stumble, they will make mistakes, and the Mela, the whole Tzibur, will follow after them. Dropsy College by the name of Solomon Zeitlin. Professor Solomon Zeitlin is known for the book that he wrote, Who Killed Jesus? On the first page of the book it says, Who Killed Jesus? Solomon Zeitlin. It's on the Shabbat of the book. So this professor had a lot of original ideas that are all, he was a crackpot, so to speak, putting it below Shanikia. He's a Vista Moritz, and he made a lot of major mistakes. But he's always publishing. He always had something original to say. So he had a Chiddush when they discovered the Bar Kochva letters, and everybody assumed that these were authentic. They had letters signed Shimon Bar Kuziva to his soldiers, instructing them that they should be mafresh trumas and maisras on the sacks of Tevel before Shabbos, because you're not allowed to be mafresh trumas and maisras on Shabbos, and the sacks of Tevel will have the status of mukta and other things like that. So this Professor Zeitlin said, it's obvious that the letters are a forgery, because Bar Kuziva, the word kazov means sheker v'chazov, a lie, a faker. So he says Bar Kuziva was a nickname that the Talmud gave him when it turned out that he was not the Melech HaMashiach. It wasn't his real name. This is not the way it's generally assumed. It's usually assumed Shimon Bar Kuziva was his real name, and Bar Kochva was a nickname, Al Shem Darach Kochav Miyankev. I think everything that this professor suggested is usually assumed to be Dvarim B'Teilim U'Mevutalim. So this was one of the many suggestions that he had.
Davening Maariv,
as opposed to davening during Beit Hashmashos. On the other hand, the Gemara in the beginning of Brachos has a din: one is not permitted to eat supper before having recited Kriyat Shema, before you daven Maariv. On the other hand, we're holding by the third hand already. On the other hand, the Magen Avraham quotes a common practice that people assume that if you appoint a shomer to remind you not to forget the daven Maariv, if a person is all by himself, he's going to eat dinner, he may forget, he'll go to sleep and forget the daven Maariv. But if you have a whole group of people, especially one of them has a chiyuv to daven for an omer, to say Kaddish, so for sure they're going to remind each other. Everyone is a shomer for the other one, we're going to remind each other. Then on the other hand, the fourth hand, the Magen Avraham quotes the Be'er Sheva. Be'er Sheva was one of the Achrayim after the Levush. Be'er Sheva has a list of kulas that the Olam is Naig, which he's opposed to. So he says, this kula, that if you appoint a shomer to remind you, doesn't make any sense. He says, arvach arva boy, who's going to make sure the shomer doesn't forget? What are you going to do if everybody forgets? So the Be'er Sheva is not happy with this kula. In many yeshivas, this is the common practice. They daven Maariv at 10 o'clock at night, when you have a minyan kavua. That's also subject to machlokes. It's also part of that heder. If you have a minyan kavua, every night you daven at 9:30. Every night you daven at 10. So you're not afraid that the person will eat supper and forget and go to sleep. He knows that he didn't. He got it up Marv at 10 o'clock, Minyan Kavua. So these are always a mixture of considerations that you have to keep in mind when you determine when you're going to daven Maariv. The other day, we were juggling with all of these considerations, and then there was an additional consideration that we hadn't considered. The caterer was very upset. Hayitochen, we were supposed to have arrived at 7 o'clock. I think we came after 9. And he wanted to already finish serving the meal, wash the dishes, and go to sleep. So he had tarumas. Why we told him that we're going to daven Maariv, and then we're going to eat the meal. So he said, like, have rachmanos already. How long do I have to wait? So that's also a consideration. So we got to, when as soon as we'll arrive in Rome, we'll have to determine which of all of the, on the one hand, on the other hand, on the other hand, and on the other hand, which hand will be Yodo Al Hu Al Yoyna. I have to determine what's going to be with Maariv.